From the heart of Big Ten country, Los Angeles, California, Ryan Abraham and David Woods present the Podcast of Champions.
Welcome, everyone, back to the Podcast of Champions. I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online, the UCLA site on the On3 Network.
Yeah, I'm not doing that.
Come on.
I am right. You don't want, the people don't want that.
People want it.
I really can't sing. That was pretty good, though.
You like
David
that?
Woods, yeah. And so that's David Woods as he sung. I'm Ryan Abraham, as I'm just saying. Yeah, what do? I publish USCFootball.com, which is the USC site on the 24/7 Sports Network. And together we make the Podcast of Champions.
There it is.
Is that better? Okay, a little effort there. Yeah, we have a fun show for you today. We're going to start sort of previewing, recapping what's going on this offseason and what we can expect from all 18, I don't know if you know this, David, 18 teams in the Big Ten. The 10? That's not accurate anymore. It used to be 10. Huh. There are 18 now. We're going to do 6-6-6. Our buddies over
That's maybe a little...
aggressive.
Is that a little tough? 6-6-6?
We'll do 6 this time, 6 the next time, and then 6 the time after that.
Satan's conference.
There's Satan involved in college football for sure, but it's the best. We love it.
Maybe that's why we love it.
We're talking about the 6 bottom teams from last year, and then next week we'll do the 6 middle teams and then the top 6 teams. And our friends over at Bucknuts did some comprehensive research talking to different publishers across one of the networks. 247. And so we're going to get some updates on just what's going on with each of these teams from Purdue, which is in the state of Indiana, David, all the way up to Indiana, which, do you know, is also in the state of Indiana.
Prove to me right now that Indiana is a real place that exists.
I've been there. You've not been there?
I have.
Okay. So we know.
But can we say for sure?
I haven't been there long. I mean,
you have a memory of having been there, but what do we know about memories?
We could be in the Matrix.
They can be false.
Yeah.
They can be falsified.
You want to meet the woman in the red dress? I don't know. This new Matrix stuff.
Tell me about her.
Yeah.
Is she cool?
She was pretty cool. She seemed cool. Okay. She walks by, gives that little look.
Yeah.
Distracts you.
But then turns into...
And then the agents get you.
Yeah. Then turns into Agent Smith and shoots you in the head.
Then it's all bad.
Yeah.
If you have questions for us, big10cast@gmail.com. Spell that all out. We got a couple emails to get to. You can call us. Not like to talk live, but you can leave us a voicemail. And if you want to text, because that's what the kids do nowadays, text us 424-532-0678. We do have a voicemail from our buddy Eddie in Orange. He was going voicemail crazy. I think he left 2 for USC shows, left 1 for us. He just loves calling. He's one of those guys. Do you talk on the phone much or not really?
I am a full talk on the phone guy.
Yeah.
I hate texting.
That's why you don't respond to me when I text.
I truly do hate it. I detest it at a very, very high level.
Okay.
Which is interesting because if I had to like pick a, like a Richard Scarry novel, like description of what I do for a living, it would be I am a writer. However, I don't want to communicate via text.
Gotcha.
I want to speak.
Yeah, I'd much rather text.
I call all of my friends. They all receive phone calls from me when I want to speak to them.
Oh, that's cool.
You receive phone calls from me when I want to speak to you. I'm not like trying to get new information out of you via text.
That's true.
Yeah.
And I just want to text you and get stuff done quick.
Not me.
And you, no.
No.
And you're not a big.
Absolutely not.
It is very efficient. Colt says, how many hours is David Woods putting in on College Football 27 tonight?
So the funniest thing about this, Colt, is that you somehow think that I'm not the psychopath who got the MVP Plus subscription and have had this thing going since July 2nd. All right. You don't know the level of psychosis over here. Now, did I go away for the weekend so I couldn't even play the stupid thing that I bought early, thus defeating the entire purpose? Yes, absolutely. the psychosis has already begun.
Love it. Hey, if you have Apple or Spotify, that's how you listen to the show. You can, either one of those platforms, you can leave us, the POC, Podcast of Champions, a 5-star rating. We love those. And on Apple, you can do a review. And on Spotify, you can leave comments for the show. We got one comment from our show last week, but it just was the number 5. I don't know if that was supposed to mean 5 stars. I'm not sure, but it was a comment. I don't think it's Trader Joe's gift card worthy. So if we have anything on the iTunes, on the Apple, David, any reviews whatsoever, we can give them a $24 gift card to our friends over from our friends over at Trader Joe's.
Amazing. You want me to look and see if there's a review?
That was that.
That was the cue.
That is your job.
I was pulling it up and then I stopped listening and then I didn't know that you were queuing me up.
Oh,
you know how it is. All right, give me a second because Apple Podcasts has done this fun thing where on the web browser, it doesn't actually populate the newest reviews at the top again. It's created that issue. So they show up at the bottom. So just give me one.
No, that's okay. Because
one
tight there's no way you could have known this was coming.
I couldn't have known. No, all right.
Since we're giving away gift cards and it's literally the only.
We literally have not gotten a new review.
The only thing you do. With
we literally have not gotten a new review. Let's move on. All right.
We're moving on. Okay. That's
I want to move on from this.
Now, all of you, I'm going to punish all of you out there for not leaving us a review. I'm now going to have to donate that $24 Trader Joe's gift card to the Salvation Army, where I volunteer sometimes. I'm going to bring it over to them. Okay.
Wow. Wow.
That's
so,
for all
so
of
some
you.
People who are actually in need are getting this now instead of you who doesn't need it.
Yes.
Isn't this bullshit? I'm enraged by this.
Yes. Cool stuff there. You know what's going to be enraging?
Tell me.
If we lose to Belgium. Because it's USA Today. I'm going to cause...
That's right. And we have engaged in corruption. We have done the true FIFA thing.
Yeah.
And we have gotten the red card rescinded on Balogun. And we are ready to go. We are now fully into like the true feeling of being a soccer nation. We have
where there's like
there's controversy.
Yes.
We have done something corrupt.
Political.
Let's go.
Did we do the corrupt thing or did
yes,
the,
absolutely we did.
So it was corrupt.
Trump was talking about it today and dude
no, he
was like,
know,
no, yeah. And homie was like, I called the head of the FIFA because I was watching. I'm a big sports guy. I don't know what a red card is. And I'm watching this and they took one of our beautiful players. They took him. One of our best players. They took him off. And so I called the head of FIFA and I was like, tell me about this. What's going on? He full on did the strongman thing. It's so great when it works for us.
Yeah.
It's so great. It's so great. In this very specific slice of life, it's so good because it's sports and it should be like this. It should be shitty and stupid. And I love that it is.
I saw someone was tweeting about like in Europe, they're just used to like getting screwed over and here we'll sue you if we get screwed over. So we have like a sense of entitlement of like we shouldn't be getting screwed over.
I think that's really so reductive. I think the more powerful European nations can absolutely get this stuff undone sometimes. No, I mean, I think, yeah, I think there is a little just, you know, sit back and take it and be angry about it forever. And I do think that's also part of the lore. And this is great because it plays to both neuroses, right? So Americans, you know, if they win this game, then they'll be like, well, you can't say anything about that. We're not villains. He shouldn't have been out. And it's like, okay, great. We get to whine about that forever. Like, you're not thinking about our win in an appreciative way, which is perfectly American. And then Belgium, they get the whole European idea, which is we were screwed. And they get to whine about being screwed for the next 100 years.
Yeah.
This is perfect. This is how sports should be. There shouldn't be a clear winner or loser. It should always be this is the most college football the World Cup could possibly be. And that's why we're in favor. This is awesome.
Yeah.
The U.S. has done a great job of making this more college football.
Love it. But it's been a very popular World Cup. I'm going to go watch the game today at COSM, which I've never been to. David says it's great. I've heard it's really
tremendous.
Cool. So go check it out and see if a bunch of European fans upset. The games have been good. I mean, we both are not soccer fans, and it's been a lot of fun to watch. And if you want to watch with a little action going on, it helps. It enhances your experience. It's already been really enhanced. Our friends over at MyBookie, they can help you out. Now, the lines are a little weird for soccer because there's the draw thing. And even if it goes to penalty kicks, it's still considered a draw, but you want a penalty kicks and stuff. So you'll see three different lines. It's a little bit different, but you can get in there. You can bet live on these games. Of course, USA is playing today. You also have Spain and Portugal. They're going at early on. The USA winner of USA Belgium will play that. But you can get some action over at MyBookie. Our promo code is POC. That's for podcast. Of champions. We've been doing this show for like 10 years or so. We're the POC. Use that promo code. And when you sign up the first time, you'll get a bet back bonus token. What does that mean? It means Your first bet up to 500 big ones will be free of consequences. That means if you lose, you get the money back. If you win, you win the bet, which is great. So use the bet back bonus token with POC as your promo code. You know, tell them over there that David and Ryan sent you. And you can bet anything, anytime, anywhere, only the friends at MyBookie.
Absolutely beautiful. I loved every minute.
Thank you, man. Yeah, I'm looking forward to this. Should be a lot of fun. The game, you know, we had, you know, three of the hosts were into the, you know, group of 32, but or in the 16, and now Canada's out, Mexico's out. That was a really good game. I don't know if you got to see that.
I saw it.
That was actually really good. And then, now USA has a chance to be the only host team left. And, you know, maybe people were like sort of loving the lovable underdogs that the USA usually isn't. In soccer, we certainly are. But I think now we'll be hated again, at least, because of this thing.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, if we, the United States of America, make the quarters, blow through Belgium, we will be truly the most despised for like a good portion of time. But then something else will happen and it'll be fine. You know, somebody will win on a handball that doesn't get called or some shit. And yeah. It's like, this is great.
Yeah. There's always these like calls and controversies mm-hmm. and stuff. Mm-hmm. And to be fair, like the call was wrong and the review process was wrong. And we've seen this in college football, right? Where like, why didn't they review that or blah, blah, blah.
The call wasn't wrong. I mean, if they had called a red card on the field, it would be fine.
Yeah.
It's that they went to video review. The ref had been staring at the thing for the entire time and didn't call a penalty. But then this was interesting because last night, England had a player sent off for a red card. But if you watched that one, and it was the same deal where the ref didn't call it on the field. And I don't know what it is, but the refs are not calling these red cards on the field
yeah.
the way they do in other times. And I don't know if they're just getting too dependent on the VAR. He went fully spikes up. So you can kind of see the difference between what Balogun did and what it looks like when it's like, oh, no, this one has to go. Is his spikes were completely up and they went directly into like the player's knee or upper calf. That's a big no-no. You can't do that. And because it's completely controlled by you. But like Balogun was going for the ball and it just so happened that guy's foot ended up being essentially stepped on.
He wasn't like looking at him to try to hit him or whatever.
Yeah. Correct. So he was appropriately sent off after the VAR review, but nobody's getting too excited about that one, mostly because England won, and also he's not literally their best player, which Balogun may be, USA's.
Yeah. So we can be hated again.
We love it.
Which is, we kind of love that position. Make a run. Yeah, it should be, I don't know, it should be a lot of fun. Do you think, so because, you know, you have a unpopular president by a lot of the people in the world, split in the country, you know, maybe split in the world, I don't know, but a lot of people aren't fans. If it was like President Obama that had made the call to the head of FIFA, do you think there'd be the same outrage just because it's America? It doesn't, but did Trump make it worse?
So two things. One, there's this isn't like a qualitative judgment because I do want to be very clear. I love that Donald Trump did this. Obama never would have done this because the decorum, the appearance of it would be so obviously corrupt that he wouldn't want to feel like he is. And it's from a pragmatic standpoint, he wouldn't want to spend political capital doing this.
Gotcha.
Because it would look bad to certain people, to certain constituents, whatever. Trump doesn't care. And so, look, if we're going to have a strong man as president, which is essentially what we have, you know, like one of those South American dictators, if we're going to have that, at least get the benefits of it too. Right? I mean, what the hell are we doing? I mean, we're going to have this. Let's not have him pretend to be Obama when this stuff comes up. No, actually put some elbows on him. Let's go.
You know, what's funny too, is the, who the former head of FIFA, Sepp something, Sepp Johnson, or
yeah, Sepp Johnson, famously.
What is his name? Sepp.
Sepp Blatter.
Sepp Blatter, yeah, something like that. And it's like Joseph. It's not Johnson. It's Joseph. It's like Joseph, but Sepp. Blatter, something like that. Was like the guy that took a bunch of money so Qatar could have the World Cup and was like, you know, ousted like criminally, like there was all kinds of crap. He's like out. He was the head of FIFA and got like kicked out, and there was you know, he's still suspended from FIFA. And they, it was like 6 years, and they added like six more for something else. I mean, as corrupt as it gets, right? He tweeted something complaining about
this. Yeah, he's why the World Cup was in Qatar, of all places.
Yeah, they moved it so it wouldn't be in the summer and all, like, yeah, there was a lot of... So he was like, apparently, I don't know this stuff well, but what I read, super, super, super corrupt, and then is bitching about this being corrupt. And it was just like, okay, like, I don't know. But a lot of people got a kick out of that one.
Yeah.
All right. Well, what are we going to do today?
I don't know.
David's not great at coming up with ideas for the show, so I texted
him. I wouldn't say that.
Literally, yes. you could say, instead of not great, you could say terrible.
Non-existent.
Non-existent. Uninterested. Our friends over, not at my bookie, but at our Bucknuts site. They cover, do a great job, Ohio State. Steve Hellwagon, he did a three-part series doing like a post-spring, pre-fall preview of all the different teams. So I thought we'd kind of go through. They broke it up into three parts. It seems good to me. We can talk about six different teams, get a little bit more detail, non-AI detail of each team.
Well, we can't verify that.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I don't think Steve did that. But you ready to go with this?
I've never been more ready for anything
so
in my entire life.
So here's how this is going to work. We're going to go. He has them ranked 18-1, how they finished in the Big Ten last year. And number 18, you got?
Purdue Boilermakers.
Purdue went 2-10 last year, 0-9 in the Big Ten. However, as we said all year, Ryan, were they the best 2-10 team you've ever seen?
They were.
Maybe. I mean, maybe not.
Some but of those like, Oregon but
they're,
team.
They're like a pretty decent 2-10.
Colorado.
You remember the best 1-11 Arizona team? Remember how good that Arizona team was that went 1-11?
Who did they beat? Some, was it like Northern Arizona or something? I forget.
They beat somebody like decent. I think they lost in Northern Arizona. But they lost a lot of close games. Remember that first year with Jed Fish?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Were they 1-11?
Something like that.
Wow.
Okay, so so Purdue returns six total starters from last year. That's not great. Two on offense.
Well, when you stink, that's probably better. You need to like flush out the roster.
Uh-huh. Two on offense, four on defense. Our friend Steve, he had the three storylines from spring. So Ryan Brown is their quarterback. He's one of the two returning starters. But he's going to get acquainted with entirely new receiving core, which is JUCO transfer Ricky Sampson, and then transfers Xavier Townsend, Asad Wasim, and BZ Owens. Now, Ryan, I got to ask you a question. Have you heard of any four of those players, any one of them?
No.
No.
Not at all.
No. So they're...
Well, it doesn't mean much, though.
It doesn't mean a whole lot.
That I haven't heard of them, but you would have liked to have at least heard the name.
I would have liked to have known a name there. I would say notably two of them don't have profiles. Two of them don't have links. They're not hyperlinked to anything. So that's probably, again, not great, right?
Yeah.
Like, not ideal. Was Ryan Brown really good last year, Ryan?
I mean, he was there.
He existed.
He existed. He threw balls. He handed balls off.
He did. He did throw balls. He did throw balls. That sounds dirty, the way you say it.
Sorry.
He threw more interceptions than touchdowns last year. Mm. They also need to replace their running back.
I mean, both are important in the game of college football.
They also need to replace their running back, Ryan.
They do.
Devin Maccabee is gone.
I liked him.
Yeah, they brought in a bunch of transfers to fill the running back spot. There's some expectation that Minnesota transfer Fame Ijeboy. He ran for 441 yards last year for the Golden Gophers. He's a 210 pounder, so a little bit bigger. That he could get a strong look as the starter. And then there's also Jarek.
You know, I thought they should do. They should get this guy Jarek Gibson from Texas.
Oh wow! Look at you.
Yeah.
The Texas.
Oh, they got him.
Okay. I know his name. Yeah. He's the guy whose name I know.
He was at Texas.
Correct. He's also going to get a look. So that's the running back situation. And then they've got to, you know, reload and replace a bunch of guys on defense.
They do mention Charles Correa. Remember?
Correa.
Correa, sorry. Do you remember?
I do remember.
He's the best player in the Big Ten.
I remember Correa.
Because he was a Purdue player that got mentioned
That's where Don Draper became Don Draper.
At Purdue?
No, in Korea.
Oh, in Korea. Okay.
Yeah.
Dick
Whitman saw Don Draper blow up and then said, I'm Don Draper now.
Oh.
Has anyone out there seen the Clickhole article about the, it's the oral history of Mad Men? It's still one of the funniest things I've ever read on the internet. If you want a treat, just Google Clickhole Mad Men oral history and just have a good 15 minutes reading that. All right.
I've never really watched Mad Men.
You've never watched Mad Men? Not even an episode.
I mean, maybe an episode.
Huh.
But I don't know.
It's pretty good.
I'll have to check it out.
Damn.
So this is an issue. Purdue was 121st in scoring offense, scoring 18.8 points a game, 115th in scoring defense. Not great. They point out that the incoming players aren't the kind that's going to boost up the roster. It doesn't seem like their NIL is in the right place. Their incoming recruiting class is ranked 60th, and that means, so there was like 20 group of five schools that had a better recruiting class than Purdue. And they mentioned, until that changes, don't expect things to get much better.
And yet he has them trending up.
Because after losing 18 straight Big Ten games, there's only one direction the program can go.
That's incorrect.
I mean, it could stay the
absolutely
same.
Absolutely false. It could be just assy as before. It could stay the same. It could go even lower. They won two games last year. They could get worse.
They could. Who's looking at the schedule? Let's look at the schedule. They got Indiana State, Wake Forest. So that's tough.
All right. So they're going to probably beat Indiana State, and then they're going to lose Wake Forest, at UCLA, Notre Dame, at Illinois, Washington, at Penn State, Maryland, at Iowa, Wisconsin, at Indiana. I mean, 1-11.
Yeah, because the three out of conference games, you have Indiana State, but then Wake Forest
and Notre Dame,
who's like, you know, a team, right? And Notre Dame. So yeah, that's not that doesn't look good.
No, they're going to lose a lot of games.
So maybe trending up is, you're not agreeing with that.
Disagree.
Okay. We have a tie at number 16.
Michigan State Spartans.
Charge!
Do we even have to do this? Like, do we even have to talk about Pat Fitzgerald?
It is cool to see a picture of Pat Fitzgerald.
God, he looks like such a chud.
They got a new AD.
Oh, what a moron. All right, last year they went 4-8, 1-8, but then they fired Jonathan Smith to hire somebody worse. Pat Fitzgerald, who hasn't coached, I think, since 2022, 23. Which one was it?
I think 22, right?
Anyway, he got fired because he's an idiot. and then he got hired here because somebody at Michigan State's an idiot. Or no longer at Michigan State. He's at Kentucky now?
Yes.
Yeah. They returned five starters on the entire team, two on offense, three on defense. One of the, it's not a whole lot. Probably their best player that they're returning is Jordan Hall, the linebacker, on defense, but it's not great. Transfer portal wise, there are some guys you should know here. Caleb Wheatland, the linebacker from Auburn, he's a dude. Charles Brantley, the cornerback from Miami. Cam Edwards, the running back from UConn. KK Smith was once a prospect from Notre Dame. They've got some top freshmen. They're probably not super heralded, so we're not going to bother with that. Storylines. Here were some storylines that came from the Michigan State 247 site. So big question is who's going to step up at wide receiver, and this should make sense to everyone because Nick Marsh, who was the number one guy, went to Indiana.
He go to Indiana? That seems like a they're good.
Well, and another thing is there was, if you remember watching Michigan State at all last year, Nick Marsh was having some issues with Aiden Chiles, with some other stuff on the team. He might have needed a change of scenery to some extent.
Yeah.
And then additionally, they lost kind of their star tight end, Jack Velling. He was the guy who came over from Oregon State with Jonathan Smith and then did end up playing. But I think he was hurt at the beginning of last year. They're also waiting on an eligibility ruling on Rodney Bullard, who's their kind of faster slot guy. So Creshawn McCray, who's one of the returning guys, he's going to have to play a huge role. And then they hit up the transfer portal. I mean, KK Smith from Notre Dame, Simon Gash, who's a freshman. I don't know. Some of these guys are going to have to step up. They do have optimism about the defensive backs in the portal. Trey Bell, who came from Iowa State, he's going to play cornerback. Tyron Chapel, apparently he's a bigger guy. Chuck or Charles Brantley, he was actually at Michigan State before he went to Miami and is now back at Michigan State. And then there's Devin Vaught at safety, Michael Richard at nickel. Those are all of your projected starters for Michigan State. And then allegedly, they have more beef up front. It seems like every season they talk about this stuff.
Yeah.
But allegedly, they got in some guys who are, you know, big. I don't know. Ben Morosky is 6'7", 340. Nick Sharp is 6'2", 351, which just sounds like likely
he's
sloppy.
He's a guard, though. He's a guard.
Yeah, but still sounds a little sloppy. And then Robert Wright Jr., who's 6'5", 294, which doesn't actually sound all that big in either respect for me.
But he says they look the part getting off the bus. So.
Well, that's all we want, right?
That matters. Areas of concern. Did they do enough on the defensive line? The pass rush has been a big weakness.
They lost that one guy to you. What was his name?
Oh, yeah. He's going to
play defensive tackle.
Media day. Why am I blanking on his name? Oh, Alex Van Sumeren.
Yeah.
More beefy interior line guy. So what are they doing there? They're pretty optimistic, though, talking about Pat Fitzgerald, that his reputation's, you know, it was redeemed after he got fired from Northwestern.
Was it?
So 17 years on the sideline of Northwestern, he was 110-101. And they were always competitive. They made two Big Ten championship games on his watch. And they hope that some NIL investment and maybe Fitzgerald can fix things up so they can get back to the way things were. Like in the Mark D'Antonio era, also trending up. We will see where they are. I know you're not as high on the Spartans.
I'd have to be high to be. His last two seasons, what did they do at Northwestern?
They didn't do well.
They went 4-20. What does that correlate with? What was going on around that time in the world of college football? 21, 22? Transfer
NIL.
Portal,
NIL, yeah.
Absolutely annihilated by it because he's a meathead and an idiot.
okay.
So, yeah, I mean, maybe they get better. I don't know. But I would bet so strongly against it that I probably wouldn't have any money in my pocket.
Four straight years of losing seasons. Obviously, you had the Mel Tucker stuff. They went to Jonathan Smith. And that was a disaster. Only two seasons, he went 9-15.
Proven winner. He went 110-101. What are we talking
about?
That's
a winner.
And it's like, okay, I get it. It's Northwestern. He was there for 17 years. And the last four of those years generally sucked. Come on. Not proven winner. Let's not go proven winner, okay?
I knew you weren't going to be excited about how positive they were looking at
Everyone's
this.
Everyone's positive this time of year.
Yeah. All right. Tied for number 16 at the number 16 spot, we have
Maryland Terrapins.
Snap. Coached by Mike Locksley, who should have been fired last year. We all agree.
Fair enough.
However, there is an actual valid reason for maintaining him this year. They went 4-8, 1-8 last year. Not great. However, they return a lot. So you just got done saying these first two teams return single-digit players, starters from last year. Maryland returns 15 starters from last year. That's a lot here in the transfer portal era. On offense, it's six guys, including, most importantly, three offensive linemen, quarterback Malik Washington, running back DeJuan Williams. So that's a core right there that you really like returning all that. And then eight starters on defense, including most of the front line, Sidney Stewart, Evan Thomas, Zahir Mathis, two of the linebackers, Daniel Wingate and Trey Reddick, and then three DBs, Jamar Glasker, Dante Joyner, and LaVane Scruggs. So that's a lot that you're returning on defense. They also consistently have recruited well with Locksley. They got in some good transfers, Chris Duer from Wyoming, Naeem Abdul-Rahim Gladding from Old Dominion. He's a receiver. Tyler Lockett from Texas State, LeVon Johnson from Texas, he's a DT, Derek LeBlanc from Central Florida, he's also a DT. And then, again, they've recruited very well. Defensive end, Zion Ely, he's a freshman, but he's a nationally ranked five-star, expected to make an impact here in year one. So the big things here, obviously, Malik Washington, who I think was really good last year, he needs to take another step forward in his development. I think a lot of people are expecting that to come. He's got all the ability in the world. He's got the size. He's kind of everything that people wanted Bryce Underwood to be last year.
Yeah.
Except he's at Maryland. And he's, I think he's going to be really, really good. I think he's probably going to be used as a runner more this year. Offensive line, them returning three starters is huge. That's a big deal. And then the big thing there is they've got to fix the running game. They were very good keeping Washington clean, but they did not run the ball well at all last year. And then something they addressed in recruiting, they've got to rush the passer and keep teams from throwing it all over them. And, you know, with Ely coming in to join Stewart and Mathis, they should have a pretty decent chance of doing that.
They should. I'm sorry. We have a comment I need to put up here. It's, I guess the game's going on right now. What a terrible life decision made me skip Spain versus Portugal to watch July Big Ten previews.
Why? I realized that as I was driving over here that I'm missing.
We could put it on.
Yeah, why don't you throw that on? That will definitely help us pay attention to what we're talking about.
That's definitely going to help. Yeah, so Maryland has been doing this, right? They started off 4-0 last season, and then they dropped their last eight. They got to be able to win some games as the season. They seem to come out of the gate playing pretty well, mostly against lesser competition. But, you know, a couple of years ago, they upset USC early, but then they just kind of fall off later in the season. So they got to keep it up. Loxley did a good job with retention. I think roster-wise, you're not looking at a team that looks like, you know, third from the bottom in the Big Ten. But that's why it's going to be critical for Loxley, because they got to win. They got to win some games. So it just seems going to be really hard for him to survive this if they're not able to do that. But the big concern they had is getting off the field. So five of their last eight opponents when they went 0-8 scored at least 34 points. So defensively, they just were, especially the second two-thirds of the season is where they had issues. And trending-wise, they're going up. These could say sideways, but because of the talent, they say trending up. And they're close to the bottom. I could see Maryland winning a couple ones. They have, you know, Hampton, UConn, Virginia Tech, where you got to play James Franklin, and then UCLA.
I buy Maryland this year. They return so much. I mean, I do think Loxley is not a good coach, so I do think that limits their upside. But they return so much. They got one of the best young quarterbacks in the league. I can get talked into like a bowl team easily.
So if they beat like Hampton and UConn, and maybe Virginia Tech. I mean, they could start 4-0 again, right? If
they could absolutely beat UCLA.
But later on, you have Rutgers, you have
Illinois,
Purdue.
You've got Wisconsin. I mean, I would put Illinois in the winnable category at home. But you got Rutgers, Illinois, Purdue, Wisconsin.
Yeah, there's some winnable games.
There's some winnable games if they're. I mean, if they're playing to their talent level, they should be in a lot of games this year.
Yeah. All right, let's go. Number 14, we got programs tied again. Let's go with
Wisconsin Badgers.
So one of the things I would be worried about as a Wisconsin fan, if I was, is it's one thing if you're Purdue and you lose a lot to the transfer portal and you don't return a lot of starters, but Luke Fickell is in his fourth year now at Wisconsin. Again, Luke Fickell, who we've got to put in parentheses, probably should have been fired last year.
Yes, another one of those.
They went 4-8, 2-7, but they only returned six starters, three on offense, three on defense. So on offense, it's a couple of offensive linemen, wide receiver Chris Brooks, and on defense, it is two linebackers and a safety. At that point, like, you should be returning kind of what Maryland is doing, where they're retaining, was it 15 starters from last year? Now, I wish I could see the transfers out. Maybe they just had an absurd number of graduates, but I doubt it. I imagine this is a lot of transfer outs. So it's just, you know, that's not great. They do have some good transfers coming in. Colton Joseph, the quarterback from Old Dominion, he's likely to start at quarterback. Abu Sama, the running back from Iowa State, he's likely to start at running back. A couple offensive linemen transfers, P.J. Wilkins from Ole Miss, Austin Kowecki from Oklahoma State. They're probably going to be in the mix to start. So they got some decent transfers. They did open up the purse strings a little bit from what I understand. But, you know, it's tough when you're not returning a ton of continuity, but you have coaching continuity because you're not getting the benefit. You're not getting as much benefit from the coaching continuity when you don't have the same players being taught year after year. You know, all that scheme continuity, it's essentially like having a new coaching staff as well. So they've got a new quarterback at the helm. That's Colton Joseph. He was quite the dual threat. He could definitely run. He's got a decent arm. So that should be, I would think, a little bit better than what Wisconsin had last year. They also added a bunch on the offensive line. So again, the hope is that those guys pan out and actually perform. And then they obviously return a couple of great linebackers in Mason Posa and Cooper Catalano. Those guys are back in the middle of the defense. It's just there's not a whole lot back around them. So they return a decent amount of production. I know this from the Bill Connolly stuff, but it's not like it's like top 20 or something. They're like, I think, in the top 60. Yeah. Anyway, get into the areas of concern, Ryan.
Areas of concern. I'm trying to pull up the they want me to verify location. What's going on? Sorry. We'll do that later. Big issues in the secondary, but they addressed it with a lot of transfers. So I think there's some optimism there that they're going to be able to bolster that secondary because they did give up a lot in the passing game last year. And Steve talked about, obviously, so much talk about Wisconsin needs to move on. After the team went 4-8, move on from Luke Fickle. And they had a losing record in back-to-back seasons for the first time since 91-92. So it's just not, you know, it's kind of like what Maryland was deciding. It's just it was going to be a $25 million buyout check. And I think in this day and age, David, you can't afford to, if you need to make the move, you just need to make the move. And you know, there's costs involved in doing this. So I think it's a gamble, you know, what they're able to do. The roster looks all right. I think the schedule's tough. You're playing Notre Dame early. You know, it could be tough. If this team starts going sideways early,
yep.
Are you going to be able to recover? I mean, he's certainly on the clock. They gotta improve. Their offense was 133 in scoring last year, 12.8 points per game, and they were 130th in passing yards last season, which is crazy. 136. It was like an Iowa kind of offense, so they need to improve it. Again, they call this a trending up because there's not a lot of places to go.
But, I guess.
Yeah,
I wouldn't say it's trending anywhere.
For Luke Fickle's sake, it better be up. Everyone can't be trending up because these are all the bottom teams. Like unless all the middle teams are going to move down. I'm not sure.
This is such a peek into the optimism of people who cover teams.
It is. I don't know if the trending up is coming from Steve writing the story or if it's from each of the.
No, I guess. I guess that's true.
We'll see. We'll see how this keeps going. All right. Also tied at 14. We got
Rutgers Scarlet Knights.
Scarlet Knight.
Greg Schiano in the seventh year of his second stint at Rutgers. He's been there a while again now.
It's crazy.
5-7, 2-7 in the Big Ten. They return 9 starters, but 2 of them are specialists, so we'll count it as 7. 2 offensive linemen, running back Antoine Raymond, who's really, really good, wide receiver KJ Duff. And then on defense, a couple of linebackers and a safety, much like Wisconsin. They're bringing in Dylan Lonergan, who's a quarterback from Boston College. Malachi Davis, a defensive end from Toledo. No one else super exciting. And their recruiting class is, you know, typical Rutgers mess. So Lonergan is expected to compete to start with AJ Cerais, the third year sophomore at quarterback. There was no starter named during spring ball, and it sounds like it was actually a true competition, like not just something where they're pretending there wasn't a naming. But I would probably bet on Lonergan, but we'll see. There were defensive staff changes. So complete overhaul of the defensive staff. Former South Dakota head coach Travis Johansson has been installing a new defense. And they were, you know, obviously a lot of new position coaches. So they're having new coach effect on the defensive end. So a lot of new transfers coming in as well. So probably figuring out where guys are slotting and all that kind of stuff. Second year wide receiver Jordan Houston, that's a name that you should know. He's likely to step into the starting slot this year. Dymir Miller and DT Sheffield, they both were really, really productive in the Rutgers offense out of that slot position, so you can expect Houston to provide a similar level of success.
All right. Where's your optimism level?
With Rutgers?
Yeah.
Not great. I think they're probably in the same range they were last year.
Okay.
4-8, 5-7.
They actually call it trending sideways, so I think this would be – this is the first non-trending up. But the defense was very, very bad. Of all the Power Four schools, David, Rutgers finished last in total defense. Not good. So
that's why they blew out their entire staff.
Yeah. So they had to remake –
what's happening up here, Ryan?
Oh, I don't know. I'm trying to get the game. So
you're trying to talk on a podcast instead of doing tech support?
Yes, instead of doing your bidding and putting the game up, which is 0-0. Oh, it's going again now. See?
Hey.
YouTube TV was asking me for like my location. I'm like, I don't know. It hasn't moved. It's been here. But yes, it's 0-0 getting towards the end of the first half, if you like the World Cup, Spain and Portugal. Were they big conquerors back in the day, David?
They were colonizers.
Colonizers, yes. Colonizers.
Spain and Portugal competed for the new world in a lot of ways. And the Pope at one time had a declaration about where they could how they could divide the newly discovered lands. It was the Treaty of Tordesillas. I think the Pope had to roll out. Yeah, the Pope did it. Pope Alexander VI. He drew a line of demarcation 100 leagues west of the Cape Verde Islands. Cape Verde, who nearly beat Argentina.
They did. Apparently, it's a beautiful place. That's, like, tourism's going to go through the roof now.
Yeah.
I've only seen pictures, but, man, it looks amazing.
Yeah, but that's why a lot of South America ended up in Portuguese hands. It's why Brazilians speak Portuguese to this day, because of the Treaty of Tordesillas.
Oh. Because
Spain was a lot bigger. Spain was a lot more powerful. Spain probably could have had most of the New World, almost all of the New World to itself, but Portugal got Brazil.
Portugal's got that cool, I mean, it's narrow, but it's right on the water, right?
Yeah. This is why Portugal got a lot of Africa.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
There you go.
So it's the battle of the colonizers right now.
It is. It is. We already got the battle of the Habsburgs, those chin-heavy fucks. Sorry, Griffin.
Wait, what?
Spain versus Austria.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. The Habsburgs sat on the thrones of both of those nations. There were a lot of succession wars about this. You don't know?
There was like ancestral stuff, right?
Yeah. Yeah. The War of the Spanish Succession. Come on, Ryan.
I'm telling you about
it. Honest to God. You fool. You innocent boob.
So Rutgers, not swimming, not, you know, the Scrooge McDuck diving into the coins, on the not Rutgers. They're a lot of debt. They need to win. They need to get this going. Shiano's sort of been like, you know, he's been around a long time. He's popular, but I think they understand they need to get this thing going in the right direction there. So it's tough. I mean, there's only so much you can do, right? But they need to dig out of this financial hole, and winning some football games would certainly help it. I mean, look what happened with Indiana. You get some, I'm not saying they're going to do that, but they need some good things to happen.
They're going
to
do that. That's what Ryan's saying.
I am certainly not saying that.
You're saying that.
Okay. And then we're going to go to, do we have, oh, we just have one more. We have one more. It's number 12 tie, and we'll do the other number 12 next week.
Penn State Nittany Lions.
Rawr. There's optimism in Happy Valley. Matt Campbell coming in from Iowa State. He saved Penn State at the 11th hour of what was a trending towards a disastrous coaching search. They went 7-6, 3-6 in the Big Ten last year. James Franklin was fired midway through that. They return just six starters, one on specialist, so we won't talk about them. One offensive lineman, one tight end, and then on defense, Tony Rojas, and then a couple of cornerbacks. But they bring in a lot of starters from Iowa State, most importantly Rocco Beck, the Iowa State quarterback from last year, but also Ben Brommer, the tight end transfer, linebacker Caleb Bacon from Iowa State, wide receiver Chase Sowell from Sowell, what are we going with there, from Iowa State, and then safety Marcus Neal from Iowa State. So effectively, they're bringing in what you would want, like, retained-wise, returning starters here in this transfer portal era. So they're doing a pretty good job of having continuity. So team chemistry, though, you're bringing in a lot of Iowa State starters to mesh with these former Penn State players and starters. 38 players in the transfer portal, 15 true freshmen. It's definitely going to be one of those growing pains years. I don't know if it'll amount to a year zero. I think there's plenty of talent here to have a pretty good year in year one. But will it be, you know, 10-2, you know, what Penn State grew used to during the meat of the James Franklin era? I don't know. I mean, I think they're going to be better. I don't know if they're going to get up to that level again that quickly. But you've got a lot of guys also returning from injury, including Rocco Beck. He was limited in the spring. Offensive lineman Anthony Donko, who was out in the spring. Tight ends Andrew Rapalia and Gabe Burkle were both out. And linebacker Tony Rojas, who were all out during the spring. So getting all those guys back for fall camp will be huge. And then, you know, there's a storyline point here, which I generally just don't think are that important. But basically, will the Nittany Lions be looser than they were in 2025? I think the only guy who wasn't loose playing football was the guy not playing football, which was James Franklin. I think, yeah, guys can play tight sometimes, but generally speaking, it's just you're playing to the level of your coaching and your talent.
Speaking of coaching, they do bring in Danton Lynn, who you and I are both familiar with. And he's going to be running the defense there. If you remember, like, wide receiver has not been a great position for the Penn State Nittany Lions. And they're trying, they tried to address it last year. Obviously, disaster. And just the whole team was a disaster. And then they're doing the same thing. They bring in a couple of the Iowa State guys, Chase Sowell, and then Breck Eskilsden. I think that's how you say. Is that right?
I don't know, man.
That's a tough one.
Yeah.
Both proven Power Four commodities. And they both have chemistry with Becht already. But they were both guys that were limited this spring because of injuries. But they got Kobe Howard coming back. They transferred their DB, Marian Jackson, who switched positions. So I think they're pretty optimistic that they can be better at wide receiver. Obviously, you got a good signal caller there with Becht and proven commodity. So, yeah, I don't think you're going to see a Kirk Cignetti kind of thing, but it's not starting from zero. I think you're like, it's not year zero, right? You feel like with the continuity, everyone's coming in from Iowa State. You know, I think just that they did fall into this coaching search and it was a disaster turned into, wow, that's amazing. And it seems like that kind of, once this hire happened, it just seems like a lot of positive things are happening, Happy Valley. So I'm pretty optimistic. They say trending up. There's no way Penn State's going to lose six games again anytime soon. And the schedule is easy. So I think I don't think it's going to be an 11-win kind of thing like we saw with Indiana. But I think they can beat the lower teams and, you know, be competitive with some of the better teams. Maybe not the elite teams, but they're probably going to be competitive with some of these other teams.
I would think so.
So, yeah, this I think we're both somewhat optimistic on what Penn State can do.
I am.
Sweet. All right. Well, that is, what do we got this game? It's 0-0.
So 0-0.
They're extra time in the first half. Yeah. That's what they call it, right? Extra time.
Added time. Extra time is when they go to overtime.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, let's take a quick break. We'll come back and do some questions. Back in a minute, everybody. Alrighty, we're back here on the podcast of champions. Happy World Cup. Try to make it to the quarterfinals, day three, I think. Something like that. We have some questions in the chat. We have some emails. If you are watching us live on YouTube, thank you very much. We have some questions I've already starred. If you have any other questions, put in the chat. I think West Texas Mike just posted one. So if you're watching the game and watching us, we appreciate all of that. Should we do the emails first? All right. Oh, we have a voicemail. You want me to start with that?
Let's do that.
The voicemail, our buddy Eddie. Here we go.
Yo, Eddie from Orange. Driving somewhere, like the huge. This is for the podcast of champions. Biff and Mitch wanted to reach out to you guys. Left a comment last week, and Biff said to give you some examples of what each Big Ten team would be if they were a World Cup team. I originally said USC would be Brazil because Brazil was good, you know, in the year 2000, you know, era, and hasn't, you know, been good, you know, hasn't won since. I think maybe Italy is a better example. They're not in the World Cup. Great team. Historically, one of the greatest teams historically every year, you know, every year they're, you know, rated pretty high, but have missed, you know, a bunch of tournaments in a row, kind of like USC hasn't made the playoffs, even though a lot of years are really close or really well ranked. Another example is, you know, Portugal and Oregon. You know, you think of Portugal as this like blue blood, great, soccer team, always does good. You know, you're like, oh, they got the best player. They got the best player in the world. They're awesome. Never won a World Cup. So kind of like Oregon. I guess Argentina would be kind of like, Ohio State, been good for a long time, best player out there. You know, won a World Cup recently, maybe they'll win another one again. I don't know how this relates really, but England and Michigan, even though Michigan has won recently, just seem like just annoying, like really annoying, think they're highfalutin, act like they invented the sport, that kind of thing. And like I said, Minnesota would definitely be Ecuador. Like, everyone tells me how awesome Ecuador was in the 1930s. Like, they won a few World Cups in a row. They were the world champions even before the World Cup was a thing. So, Ecuador, awesome team, back before the TVs existed. Kind of like Minnesota. All right. Those are a couple examples. David might have some better ones. Hey, from Orange.
It was beautiful.
Thanks, Eddie.
That was absolutely
good
beautiful.
Stuff. We happen to be watching Portugal for one of them.
Yeah, I kind of like the Brazil as USC thing more. You know, kind of iconic uniforms, iconic history, but haven't been good in about 20 years.
Yeah, I mean, I think Italy would work too, like not making the playoffs, but...
Yeah, but that's just one time, you know?
They haven't made it the last three times.
It's the last three?
Yeah.
Jesus.
I know. One of my buddies I coach volleyball with, he's from Italy, and it was like, yeah. I mean, they would win the thing, and they're not making it. So I don't know. It's weird.
Yeah. Okay. I like it. Thank you, Eddie. That solves our problem of doing that, which we would be very bad at.
Yeah.
So thank you.
Because we're not good at these things. Let's see. Do we have?
Do you want a email question? I've got one.
Oh yeah, yeah.
All right. This is from Keon. Super League with relegation.
Okay.
Hi, gents. Happy July. Hope you had an excellent 4th of July. To answer the question from the previous episode, which college football teams are most like World Cup teams, I'd say U.S. soccer in 2022 is most like UCLA under Deshaun Foster, while U.S. soccer this year is closer to what we're hoping UCLA becomes under Bob Chesney. Okay, fair enough. On to my hypothetical. A Super League system that could actually work. You'd have a Super League with regional groups of 8. Each year, the bottom 2 teams from each region would be relegated to the lower league, and the top 2 from the lower league would be promoted up. Of course, this would require blowing up the current media deals and conference structure, but since this works in European soccer where players don't have salary caps, I think some version of it would work for college football too. What are your thoughts? Would this save college football if a Super League were to happen? Would it be at all realistic? Thanks and keep it mediocre. It's not so much the salary cap as it is enforceable contracts. If this came with enforceable employment contracts with the various players, then yes, this would work. But I think the fundamental problem right now in college football is not necessarily the Super League, though that is looming on the horizon. It is that players don't have enforceable contracts because they aren't employed.
Yeah.
And if you correct that, and that's the obvious solution, but if you correct that, then a lot of things can get figured out. Because once they're employees, you can then think about doing collective bargaining and all that other stuff. But more to the point, the money then becomes above board. You can actually approach it as, you know, you can treat undue enticements as, you know, against the rules of your league very easily, because it will not be part of their salary. I don't know. There's a lot that goes into it that would make it better and more palatable.
Agree. And I think relegation's tough to implement because we haven't had it. I think it'd be awesome to have some kind of...
I would love it.
But I think no one's going to... If you don't have it now, it's like you're not going to sign up for it. You know, if you could... If you're on, like, Ohio State wouldn't care, but, you know, other teams like a Nebraska probably would because, like, they could be on the fence or whatever. So you don't want to be relegated and, you know, you want to be at the table. Like, there's a whole structure going on right now. Just even the separation between the big two and the next two and then the power six and then everyone else. And the gap gets wider and wider and people, you know, you got to do like what Indiana did and try to get into the on the cool kids table. El Gordo Flacco, I believe Uruguay has two stars and won what was considered the first World Cup. So maybe that's what Eddie was referring to in the other one. Okay. This is Crispy Bruin, who's in the chat. Most miserable game. Hey, guys, the World Cup hydration breaks are stupid. A thinly veiled carve out for television partners to run ads and extend the primary broadcast. I've endured 110 degrees at the Rose Bowl just to watch UCLA start the game 3-and-out and then get punt blocked for a TD against Bowling Green. You want me to believe the Iranian national team needed a hydration break inside climate-controlled SoFi Stadium? It's funny. I went to play nine holes at the West Drift, which is close by here, and some of the World Cup teams had stayed there. They had closed the course for like 3 weeks because there was World Cup teams staying there. One of them was the Iranian team. And they had these big, like to block the street kind of stuff, like, you know, massive metal structures that were opened up we could drive through, but they would be able to close. So I didn't realize that, but they were just over like Manhattan Beach, like where they were staying, and big security over there.
You're an Iranian guy.
What do you say?
Iranian?
Iranian? It's probably right? Or no? Someone corrected me the other day.
Well, because it's Iran. Right?
It used to be Iran, and now it's Iran.
It never used to be. I think we just said it stupidly in the 80s.
Okay.
But you learned it that way.
I did.
So I'm wondering when the shift happened.
I'm not sure.
Because I think when I was a child, it was Iran, or we were saying that.
Yeah.
But then it became like Iran. By the time I was in college, it was Iran.
Okay. The flock of seagulls. I ran so far away.
And by it was, look, to our Iranian constituents out there, we understand that first you may not say that. You may even say Persia. We get that. But our stupid American tongues, for the longest time, were saying that Iran.
Right.
And then at a certain point, our stupid American tongues, most of ours, not all of ours, case in point, were educated up to Iran.
Iranian.
That may still not be correct.
So it should be Iranian. Iranian. My apologies.
No. Stick to your guns here, sir.
No, I'm just the way I grew up saying it. But I was corrected. My friend... wife from Turkey, not from Turkey, Turkey A. And I think I said Iran or something. It was like, no, Iran. I was like, okay, sorry.
Sorry.
Not trying to offend anybody. On the subject, what's
actually, I know that about you. You're always trying to offend people.
I do.
You're a very controversial figure.
that's me in a nutshell. So on the subject, what's the most miserable weather you've had to endure while covering your teams? I've heard Montlake can be terrible in November. And I've been to Hawaii where it's 85 with 100% humidity, and they still inexplicably decided to throw unrefrigerated spam musubi into the crowd. Musubi? How do you say it? Musubi. I think it's musubi. Since Ryan will use any excuse to expense his travel and Dave actively avoids going to games, I'm sure you'll both have great stories to share. Keep it mediocre, Crispy Bruin.
Crispy Bruin, that's a great point, because why do you think I actively avoid going to games?
Stuff like this.
Yeah. Because it sucks. It sucks shit. Like, I don't want to sit in the stands watching something awful and feeling like I'm dying. I went to Texas, UCLA at Texas in 2010.
Okay.
And I was sitting with my brother. And we were sitting there the entire game just staring into the sweltering heat. Like, it was, like, the humidity that weekend was absolutely insane. And we're just sitting there watching the game. And it was a great game, 42-12. And at the end of it, my brother's just sitting there. And I'm like, all right, we should probably get going. He's like, I can't get up yet. And I'm like, oh, what do you mean? He's like, I think if I get up, I'm going to fall over and faint. And I'm like, oh, well, that's not good. Yeah, that's where we were sitting for that time. Like, imagine like performing athletic endeavor, impossible. Anyway, that was horrific. I hated every bit of that. A lot of people have said Michigan at the Rose Bowl in like 2001 was one of their worst experiences weather-wise.
And the Rose Bowl.
Yeah, you know Pasadena in August and September.
It could be really hot.
So, but at Texas, that's probably my pick for worst weather I've experienced at that game.
So,
oh, wait, no, that's not even true.
Okay.
Vegas Bowl, 2004.
Oh.
I was standing on cold concrete wearing shorts, and I think the temperature at some point with wind chill was in the single digits.
Oh, wow.
My toes burned when they touched water for like the next 6 months.
Oh, that's miserable.
Yeah.
So this last year was couple of the worst, like the USC Notre Dame game. There was a lightning delay. I was in two lightning delays this last year. USC at Purdue and USC at Notre Dame, and I don't remember really that happening. I think there was like a Notre Dame one in the Coliseum like years back. But that was pretty bad. Like the Notre Dame game, there was potential to cancel it. Like there was, but then the lightning went away and they were able to play. Purdue, it was bad. I think like 1998, it was, if I'm not mistaken, I think it was that year, Carson Palmer's first year, and USC played Purdue, in the Coliseum. I think that was Drew Brees and Carson Palmer. And it was like super, super hot. And like band members were passing out. There was like a lot of stuff going on there. So that was one. Yeah. Okay. So yeah, that's the one I had. Or one of the couple of the ones I had. But this past year, there were some bad ones.
Yes.
All right. You got the next one?
I do. This is from our friend Maximus Decimus Meridius. Good day, gents. I must congratulate both of you for not only being the sole expert leaders on the Big Ten, but now also my go-to place for World Cup coverage and analysis. Dave, can you please recreate the, quote, perfect phone call between Trump and FIFA's president Gianni Infantino and what that sounded like? Appreciate it, gentlemen. I kind of already did.
Yeah, I think you did.
I don't have a good Trump. I wish I did. I don't have a good Trump impression. I can do a lot of voices, but I can't do, I don't do great at mimicking a person's specific
voice. You're more like, you try to offend an entire culture.
Yeah, that's what I should do. I should say I can do a caricature of a race or nationality, which I'm not going to do.
Okay.
I can do a regional, which I do often, but I can't easily dive into a specific person's cadence.
Yeah.
I would probably have needed to like train myself in some way to do that. And that is, obviously that would be work.
If you had like a multiple choice question and like, who is the president of FIFA? Like Gianni Infantino would definitely be selected.
100%. 100 times out of 100. And honestly, if you got a picture of him, like looking all bald and evil, you'd be like, oh yeah, that's the FIFA president right there.
There were people using his picture after the Sepp guy was doing the same stuff, and they were putting that picture there. It's just like,
so
it just seems like an evil, corrupt organization.
So Kanuna,
perfect for Paul
Kunaga. It's then Musubi instead of Musubi.
Where did he put that? Let me see. Yeah, Musubi.
So it'd be Musubi.
Musubi.
You got an emphasis on the right syllable.
Emphasis on the syllable of Musubi.
Musubi.
Musubi. Yeah, Musubi. That's what Asian Wolf says. Are you a Musubi fan?
Sure, yeah.
I like it. I'll get it sometimes when I get poke.
Like pretty much anything from like Asia generally, I eat that shit up.
Oh, yeah.
All of it. All of it.
How was your fourth, by the way?
It's great. Had a great time.
Yeah. You were in the desert.
Out in the desert.
Again, you're on vacation. You're leaving on vacation again tomorrow.
I'm leaving on vacation tomorrow.
I'm here.
I know. You're just here holding it down.
Like, you're the one traveling. Like, we make people make fun of me. You're going to Hawaii.
Uh-huh.
You are in exotic Palm Springs.
Before that, I was in beautiful Paso Robles.
Oh, my gosh.
Robles? I think it's one of those ones where we're not supposed to pronounce it like the Spanish do because it's, Americanized.
Yeah. I did the full-on American. I was like, it was sort of last minute. I'm going to have people over in the driveway. Driveway parties were sort of a throwback to what we did during the pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
I have a new turkey fryer that I got last year because I had one for like 15 years. First, I did a seafood boil in it on the desert, which was great, like for New Year's. This is the first time I put hot oil in it. Awesome. I was like, I'm just going to fry everything. Deep fried turkey, full on turkey. It was great. Injected it with like chicken broth and rubbed it with like Cajun seasonings. It came out awesome. The halibut I caught in Canada, it was Canadian, so I know it's 4th of July, but that's fine. Beer battered it. First time ever doing that. Freaking awesome. I did summer squash, but a little batter on that. I made delicious. Homemade French fries. Maybe those were the best. I have like a fry cutter. You double fry them, David. I fried them, took them out, put them back in, super crispy, and then deep fried Oreos at the end with a little powdered sugar on top.
Hell yeah.
I made the batter. It was so good.
Hell yeah. Somebody asks El Gordo Flacco, did David ever find a tax person?
Oh,
I kind of did. I kind of did. And they set up my S Corp. However, I need somebody who's going to talk to me like I'm an idiot and figure this out for me. So if you are the kind of person who can talk to me like I'm an idiot, even if I pretend to know something,
anybody,
please reach out. You can reach out actually to big10podcast@gmail.com. If you are willing to be my tax person, reach out.
No accounting degree required.
Correct. Just I will be forever in your debt.
All right. Was that the last one? We do.
We got one more.
Oh, I'm sorry. Well, here, I'm going to put this one up on the screen too. From McGee. Dave. In honor of 250 years of American greatness, give me your best, albeit commie, Son of Sam take on the Europeans losing their mind. Buffalo, Balogian. How does it say?
Balogun.
Balogun playing tonight.
It's delightful. I don't think Americans have upset Europeans in a way that like the fair-minded American can really sink their teeth into. In this way in so long. Because you know what? Fuck y'all. All right?
Sorry.
Balogun rocks. We want to watch him play in the sport that we don't care about most of the time. And you guys care about it so much. And it's really, really funny to do this to you. We don't care enough to be like, we're just doing this corruption as a little treat.
Yeah.
We don't care about this one.
No.
But we're like, hey, why not? Hey, we're pretty good. Why don't we want to see the best player play. So let's just, lean on this guy a little bit. And you guys have to eat it. And it's so funny. Now, is it funny when we do it on other stuff? No. But it's pretty funny.
This is funny, this one.
We can sink our teeth into this one. This one's great.
This isn't our thing.
Like, look, you want to carry your American guilt on other stuff. Look, I do it all the time, and it's totally fair. You can do that, all right? But this one's funny and good, all right? It's a sport we don't care about. It's a team that, historically we suck ass at this sport. Like, we shouldn't be any good. We kind of are this year. Maybe we might win another game. Probably aren't going to win two more.
Probably not.
It's really funny to do this. And I think you should just embrace how mad it's making something called Belgium. Can you even prove to yourself that Belgium exists?
I've been there.
Right?
So I have been there.
Like, look, just because you revolted from the United Provinces, all right, just because you decided that you didn't want to be part of the Netherlands doesn't mean you're not. All right. You're still part of the Netherlands in my eyes. Nobody knows who you are. Nobody cares about you. Okay. But you get to be upset for a while. So people will write your name and things, and then they'll convince other people that you're a real thing. But you're not.
Brussels isn't real.
Oh, no. Brussels is real. It's just a part of the United Provinces of Netherlands. All right. Belgium, you're not real. Except when you're conquering Africa and doing atrocities down there.
We're getting dark here.
Hey, look, King Leopold, maybe one of the most evil figures in history, and I know a lot of history.
You do know a lot of history.
Do you know what that man was doing in the Congo?
No.
He was cutting off people's hands because they weren't getting rubber out fast enough.
Oh, well, that, I mean, you got to get the rubber out fast.
Jesus.
That's pretty bad.
Belgium, you shouldn't be a real thing.
But there is
should go back to the Netherlands.
So the
Dutch did some fucked up things, too. The East India Company. Jesus. But they didn't cut off a bunch of people's hands in Congo.
For not harvesting rubber fast enough.
Yeah, for small countries, those countries have punched above their weight in terms of atrocities.
Yeah. But the whole point of
they have done some mega atrocities.
Let's get off of the atrocities for a second. The not caring but still being better at it than you. Like my little cousin out in Temecula, she's great. Zoe, 17, just graduated high school. She's like fourth in the world in her age group for CrossFit. She's a competitive CrossFitter. They got a big tournament coming up, and there was some other like lifting sort of competition that was like it's different, you know, and. The people that were there were like, they've been doing this forever. They like study the things you're supposed to do. And like, she showed up and like won some events or something. And it really pissed people off because she did not, she was just good at the stuff. So it'd be like, if you're like a good tennis player and you make fun of like pickleball, you got that guy that's been in the leagues forever and he's like ranked or whatever. And then the tennis guy just shows up and kicks his butt and he's never played pickleball before. Stuff like that. I feel like that's the, I don't know if the right analogy, but I'm in that range.
Yeah, I get that.
All right. Do you want me to do this next one or you want me to do it? El Gordo Flacco.
I got it.
Okay.
Two shows in a short time. Excellent. I hope these are acceptably mediocre questions. One, what drove the decision for both of you to attend USC, UCLA, respectively?
I grew up in New England. I was in Pennsylvania, went to New England. So many people were going to, there's colleges everywhere. You trip over them in New England. And I got a letter from USC, didn't know much about. And then I ended up getting a partial scholarship there. And I was going to go to Carnegie Mellon in Pittsburgh, where I was originally from, or a bunch of schools in New England. And I was just like, fuck it. Sorry, Griffin. Like, I'm going to go to I'd never been to the West Coast before. And I just kind of like, I got about the same amount of money every place. So I just went on a whim. I'd never been to California before.
So there's two things here. One, my dad went to UCLA, my older brother went to UCLA, and my older sister went to UCLA. So it was kind of always a thing. I was also denied agency in this decision. My mother didn't trust my judgment particularly well with moving away from home. So I actually went to UCLA my first year as a commuter. So I didn't apply anywhere besides UCLA. I think I checked the boxes or whatever for like three other UC schools, but I wasn't going to go there. And then I can't even remember if I put in an application at Long Beach State or not. So the reality was that if I didn't get into UCLA, I was probably going to a JC. So kind of putting all the eggs in one basket. But if I had had my preference, I was probably going to apply to Stanford.
Oh.
But I didn't. So I went to UCLA.
Nice. Delightful. So you had I was like the first person in my family to go to college. You had like everybody
to
go to
college. I was the fourth. I was the fourth of my the fifth of my siblings.
Oh, wow. Yep. Okay. Crazy. All right.
Yep. Two, if you could change one thing about the football programs at USC, UCLA, what would it be?
Change one thing. I don't know. What are you thinking? It's hard, like
admissions.
Oh, okay,
I would make admissions easier.
Yeah, I'd probably make it so one of their billionaire alumni would be like the.
Yeah, no, I would do infinite money glitch. I don't know. I mean, yeah, there's a lot you would change.
USC's doing a pretty good job with the money stuff, but I don't know of like one. I think it's better if you have one person. If you have a Cody Campbell or. You know, the Nike money or whatever, you know, Phil Knight. I know it's tough on the athletic department to keep raising money every year. So if you had that one benefactor, I think it would solve some problems.
Yeah, agreed. Three, the Big Ten Conference is doing well. If you were in charge, what changes would you implement for the conference? Non-facetiously, one of my big ones would be to go to 24, add Cal and Stanford, put the West Coast teams in an 8-team pod. Or is that eight? No, it would be six. So USC, UCLA, Cal Stanford, Oregon, Washington. So you're playing five of those teams every year and then four of the other pods. And you would have four pods. So okay. Four divisions. I think that would help a lot of the competitive issues that the West Coast teams will face in perpetuity.
All right. I like
you'd that. Have to add a couple. You'd obviously have to add four more teams, but like try to add them geographically even enough so that you're having five games a year where the travel, even if you're home or away, is not prohibitive.
All right. So we're big enough that's like you're already at 18. Screw it. Just add these other teams and stuff.
Well, that's the thing. It's already stupid. So make it so you've got essentially five protected games every year against regional teams because then you would still have. Like, how much better would you feel about this right now, Ryan, if you knew USC was going to play Oregon, Washington, Cal, Stanford, and UCLA every single year?
That'd be great. Yeah.
Yeah. If I still knew that, then I wouldn't feel the way I do about how awful this is. If I knew, okay, well, you're still going to get the Bay Area rivalry games every year. You're still going to get Oregon and Washington every year. You still have USC every year. So you can deal with four games, home and away. You'd have two home, two away against the rest of the Big Ten. Those would be like a little treat, a little added thing. And I think most people would feel this way. Like if, you know, Michigan, you play Michigan State, Ohio State, whoever, who gives a shit, whoever other like schools Michigan usually plays, I don't care. But you know what I mean? Like you could make this work, but you got to pick out some other teams to make it work. You need, I think 16 pods would be really cool.
All right. I like that. We have more questions from the chat. Mike, which Big Ten teams will surprise in a positive way and which will disappoint? Let's see. Surprise in a positive way.
Maryland.
You think Maryland will? Okay. We talked about them earlier today.
Negative way? There's always an obvious answer here.
Wait. Well, any more positive ones?
There's always an obvious answer on the negative.
I know. We're going to do some positive ones.
There's
first.
Always an obvious answer on the negative. Do you know what?
Could like Northwestern be positive?
Nope.
Okay.
I mean, Wisconsin could always come together. I doubt it, but they could.
If you want to go from like a Washington or a USC has the potential to.
Oh, that's not the answer.
They could be positive on both. They could certainly be negative, both of
that's
them.
That's not the answer on the positive.
You could UCLA, I think. I don't think you could be a negative.
UCLA could absolutely be a positive.
They could be a positive for sure. I mean, even like a Wisconsin, like any of the teams that were going to fire their coach, like a Wisconsin.
Minnesota could take a step even further up. They return a lot.
But they've
from
been
last
like,
year.
They're just like consistently pretty good.
Yeah, know? But they could take a step up to like legit. Yeah. And then on the negative side, I think there's an obvious answer here.
Michigan State is what you're.
No. No? There's another one?
You think Whittingham's not going to do a good job at Michigan or something? Or
that's not the one I was thinking of. The one I was thinking of was USC. Because everyone always talks themselves into USC every offseason. Ryan is not immune to this.
No.
He's done it a few times where he's like talking up their defense, and then their defense ends up being dog shit again.
I think who was right last year? You were wrong, and I was right on that
I think
one.
I've been right pretty much every other year. Okay. However,
that's good. You say they're bad.
I look at that schedule and I'm trying to put on my like judicious hat, right? And I'm saying 8-4 is like the midline. Like that is like the most likely scenario is that they're going 8-4. And then I read all these.
I
USC
think it's probably
people,
more 9-3, but that's fine.
But between that's not true. No, but that's fundamentally not true. So it's not 9-3. The midline is 8-4. That's sad for you that you would say that. And the point is
the over under is like 8.5, right?
But
so
Joe,
that would be between
Joe
those two.
USC fan, right?
Yeah,
guy at home, he's reading the Peristyle, he's thinking about USC.
Okay,
like the ones who are not negative about Lincoln Riley. He's sitting there thinking they're going playoff this year, right? So if they go 8-4, right, that already is supremely disappointing to Joe USC fan. And 8-4, I would say, like right now, I think Vegas has it at 8.5 wins.
8.5 wins, yes.
Right. So 8-4 so, and 9-3 are like.
That's what we both said. Yeah, and you're saying one's fundamentally wrong. They're both sides of
the. Well, because I'm right and you're wrong. Okay. But my point is, like both of those records, you know what they don't indicate?
That's not a playoff team.
That's not a playoff team.
Right.
So USC, like from a baseline, is like already preemptively feeling like a likely disappointment.
Well,
for
that's
people.
True. Yeah, unless, if they don't make the playoffs, then you could say it's disappointing.
Correct.
Even though that's not,
and
like,
then
probably
there
realistic.
Is a non-zero chance it's worse than that.
Oh, there certainly
like,
could.
There's a back end to that, like a 30% chance that they're 7-5 or 6-6. Like it's not.
I don't know about that high, but sure, that's a chance.
Well, if you say that there's 50% in between 8-4 and 9-3, right? Then there's maybe 20% above, 30% below, something like that, right? We're okay. In a percentage game. It's
sure,
not
yeah.
The confidence band is not 2 win totals. It's,
right.
You know, 5 win totals. So I look at that and I'm just like, preemptively, obviously, USC is the answer here.
Okay. Let's see. Mike also says, just left you a 5-star review on Apple Podcast. Apple doesn't make it easy.
No, and it won't show up for a while. So, but we'll check it next week.
Thank you for that one. West Texas Mike has a question. Let me pull this one up. Why has Penn State been so enamored with bringing in Danton Lynn? In USC's biggest games, his reverse psychology seemed to be, let's let them feed their best player. I don't know. I mean, he was pretty good. Like,
I thought he was pretty good. Honestly, like, you might have complications with certain things about a defensive coordinator, I guess. But like, I thought he was really good at UCLA. And again, Lincoln Riley is the head coach, and his defenses generally suck shit or are like mediocre at best, right? So at a certain point, if you get a guy who was good at UCLA of all places, remember, UCLA had a good defense under Danton Lynn, then it's probably the head coach, right? Like, are we thinking Gary Patterson's going to have a top 25 defense this year? Because let me tell you right now.
I think the head coach is really important to having like a good defense. It's not just the defensive coordinator. So if Danton Lynn didn't do a good job at USC...
Yeah, it's on the head coach.
It could be on the head coach. He did a good job at UCLA on the head coach, Chip Kelly. So it's perfect because he's such a good head coach.
I walked right into
he
that.
He did such a good
walked
job.
Right into it.
You're such an idiot. Oh, my God, that's perfect. You just, I love your life.
All right, let's watch some Spain-Portugal and get the hell out of this show. This dreadful, awful show we Angel record says, every week.
They do like your idea about the West Coast pod. Oh, wait, this is the wrong one. This is from Doug. He says, can we call it the Pac-8? That'd be good.
Yep.
Asia Wolf, I'm with Dave. Would love a West Coast pod and a 2014 Big Ten. Yeah, so good stuff. And then, yeah, West Texas Mike. David did walk right into that. You did, David. Just to prove the greatness
right
of Chip
it.
Kelly. Danton Lynn's good, but he couldn't be... like, Lincoln Riley wasn't good enough for him to excel. You needed a much, much better, much more hands-on, into recruiting, knowing the local cultures, knowing the teams as well. As you need a guy like that to run your team for the defense to raise its level. And Danton Lynn was able to do that because of Chip Kelly. So
I hate everyone and everything.
That's so perfect. And a great way to end the show. But I hope you guys all had fun. It is still 0-0 with the colonizers going at it. For David Woods, I am Ryan Abraham. Hope you all enjoyed the show, and we will talk to you next time.
Goodbye.